I'm Dr. Brian Goldman, host of the CBC podcast, The Dose. Each week, we answer vital health questions that will help you thrive, like, what does my mental health have to do with my gut? How can I prevent melanoma? How much sleep do I really need? And how can I manage my health without a family doctor? I chat with the top experts to bring you the latest evidence in plain language, all in about 20 minutes. Find The Dose on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
I've been noticing that I've been feeling really good. I'm working like Monday through Saturday this week.
Whoa.
And I'm just like loving it. And I love it so much. And I like, the flip side is I really hate being at home.
Okay.
So I'm like, I'm out of the house. This is awesome. Is being like so challenging and things are not going well at school. So I just had an hour and a half meeting with her teacher and the principal. And they're like super supportive and they're like, what do we do? But then I'm also facing this, like, I have an appointment with her pediatrician next week to talk about ADHD medications.
Okay. Wow.
And so I wanted to have a meeting with them anyway, but I wasn't sure that we'd be able to fit one in. And then they're like, threatened to kill somebody at school today. So we're gonna, like, can we have a meeting?
Yeah.
I'm Hillary McBride, and this is Other People's Problems. We're listening to a real-life therapy session between me and one of my longtime clients we're calling Vanessa. Vanessa is a woman I've been working with for a few years now. She actually came in after having her second kid, and she was really struggling with anxiety. In fact, it was impacting almost every moment of her life. She had a particular kind of anxiety that we call health anxiety, or I'm sure you've heard the words hypochondriac before. So Vanessa was so preoccupied with managing germs and hand washing and having these horrible nightmares and waking up in the middle of the night imagining the worst case scenario was happening that it made daily life feel almost impossible for her. And then this day, she comes in and is talking about how it's been really hard at home. But we are also hearing is that there are these moments of joy, that her life is really shifting quite a bit. She feels like she's coping way better than she has in the past. And so we can start to zero in on some of these issues, specifically around parenting, that are coming up for her. Her husband travels a lot for work. He's gone for long periods of time. And when he comes back, sometimes that can feel relieving. It takes the weight off, but it can also mean negotiating relationship. There's another body in the house. But right now she's talking about how having that extra person to help means things are feeling a little bit lighter.
Like, I am appreciative where I am and I don't want to like disqualify it. But one thing I've noticed is that like his work schedule got changed, so he didn't go away on his last trip. And like when he goes away, like Monday I'm great, and then like by Friday I just like I feel like there's no hope anymore. Sort of like, because Friday doesn't go to school, and she is very hard to spend a whole day with, and sometimes my mom can look after her but not always. And then I have to go into Saturday and I have to do the whole like soccer and like dragging the kids when they don't want to go somewhere, like that whole rigmarole. And then I still have to get through Sunday. And it's just like not invalidating how good I feel, but also recognizing that like I've had a bit more of a break and how like hard it is to do it all on my own and living my life in these 2-week cycles is getting really exhausting.
Can you tell me what you're noticing? It felt like it shifted a little bit. What's happening now?
I feel really sad.
Yeah.
I feel really sad because the life that I have set up isn't really working for me, and that feels hard.
It's not sustainable.
Yeah, it's not sustainable. And like I often like kind of grieve the fact of not having like two normal children and who's to say what's normal and, you know, everybody struggles and all that. But having one child that is like much higher needs and that like most parents aren't getting called to come have meetings at the school. By age of six, they're not usually cutting up all the bed sheets with scissors and all the other things that she does. And and I feel there's a lot of like guilt and shame wrapped up in that too. And like recognizing that I'm not enjoying my child right now. Okay. And that like being alone with her for a whole day really impacts my mood.
Yeah, can I pause you there for a moment? Yeah, there's so many important things you just named. I want to give space for them all. There's, wow, you're carrying so many things. And I can only imagine how good it's felt to not have to do that on your own, to get a break from the rhythm that wasn't working. And then the pain of getting that relief and knowing it can't stay that way forever.
Yeah.
Like there are all of those pieces that all have their own feelings to them. What you're holding is so hard. Like to be a parent at all, to be in this kind of mucky situation with your marriage, to have to shoulder so much on your own, to have the demands, the extra demands of a kid who needs more from you. I mean, all those things.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
For a few years now, one of her kids has really struggled socially and at school. There have been a number of assessments. They've been trying to figure out what's been going on, but as is the case with kids, unlike adults, they don't have the words to put to what's happening on the inside of them. Some of her behaviors have involved hurting herself or other people, or feeling like she can't stay alone and for any period of time. And this family has worked so hard to get to the point where she could be in the school system and that they could trust that things would go well during the day. But there's been some more assessments and some more psychological support, and they might be getting to the bottom here of what's been going on for her the entire time. And they're about to try some medications.
Can we just touch into that sadness for a moment? What's it like to be with it today?
When I was like talking about it, it felt really intense. And then when you reflected back to me, like validated it, I guess. And now I feel like it's like settled.
Whoa.
So,
okay. Yeah. I mean, what do you make of that?
what do we do with that information?
Yeah. I don't know.
I think about how long you have in your marriage, in your life, been like, does anyone see that I'm hurting? And
yeah.
Again, like your system responding with a release when you felt seen.
Yeah, I think like when I was really struggling postpartum, I almost had this sense of like, well, if no one can see me suffering, then maybe I'm not actually suffering. Like, like sort of invalidating my own feelings. And like, it must not be that bad if nobody else, like if nobody's helping me, like maybe it's not that bad, sort of. I'm thinking about like specifically, like it felt like it should be really obvious to him. And then sort of like, well, maybe I'm not so bad because if nobody's noticing, I don't know. That just
I think you're, it's like, let's stay with that for a moment. I mean, what other choices would you have, right? Get louder. Like, oh, maybe I just need to pull up my bootstraps. Maybe I'm making this up.
Right.
Just to get through sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I'm getting flashes of when I saw the two of you last and you were using your voice in a way that you didn't know how to then. Like, I was hurting. You didn't see me. Pay attention. I'm not invisible. anymore. I'm not going to let my pain be invisible anymore.
It really was a survival mechanism, to self-silence and not... Because anytime I would try and bring up how I was feeling, he would just shut down. So I couldn't, it was just more painful to bring stuff up. Like you said, I didn't have a choice. That was just the way to get through.
Yeah, or we could say that you didn't know how to do then what you know how to do now. I really believe you were doing the best you could. And that maybe that looks different now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So let's go back just for a moment to sadness and then you feeling validated and it kind of settling. What's there now?
I think the sadness is still there, but less so. And it's holding it within the sort of good feeling of how I've been feeling overall. And then there's this sadness as well. So it's kind of this both thing. Do I get a gold star on my chart again?
what told you that? You see my kind of wow face.
Yeah.
Why might my wow face be emerging in this moment?
Because I can feel two feelings at the same time.
Gosh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
I have so much joy listening to this moment again. I can't separate myself from all of this awe and pride and gratitude for the work that we've done. I only wish you could hear all of the steps that Vanessa took to get to this moment, where there was so much anxiety there in the way that it was hard for her to drop into almost any feeling at all. And then after we were able to start feeling together, it seemed like the sadness would never end. There was just this bottomless pit of pain. And then after that, she started to develop the skill to hold multiple feelings at the same time. From not being able to feel at all, to being able to hold this complex landscape within her. But you'll hear in what happens next that it's really hard for her to stay there. We've worked together to help identify that joy in particular is hard for her to stay with. And so this thing pops up as soon as she's feeling joy that tries to take her away from it. It's a way that she's protected herself in the past, but like with lots of things that we did in the past, they carry on into the present and they eclipse or try to take away some of these most beautiful moments from us. It's hard for her to stay there, and she leaves it and starts to tell me about when her husband goes back to work and is already worried about when this feeling is going to shift.
And then there's also this sort of I'm like, oh, can this last?
Okay, good. Yeah. So what is that protecting you from in this moment? Let's think of that as a defensive strategy that's helping you in some way. How is that helping you right now to go there?
Kind of a protective thing of don't feel too good now because it's just going to get worse later.
Yeah. Is it telling you that, or is the logic with that it'll hurt worse if I let myself feel this, or just that it'll hurt at all?
Yeah, I guess the higher you go, the farther you have to fall. Mm. And I don't think that I logically believe that, but
that's an old story.
Yeah.
Somewhere in there.
Yeah. I can't say that I'll feel depleted and exhausted again, but I might.
Okay.
Right? So
I have a curiosity. Yeah. My wondering is if that defensive strategy of it's not gonna last forever sort of thing, if that was about this alive feeling that you're having right now, or if it was more about you feeling my pride, my delight in you in some ways.
Mm.
Was it protecting you from taking in how I feel about you?
Oh, maybe.
Or was it more about this general state?
Might be both.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What is it protecting you from?
It often feels like if somebody gives me a compliment or I get good feedback, I'm well, you just don't know.
Mm.
You just don't know the real me. I'm actually a terrible person underneath. Mm. And you only see me is yeah. one way, because that's what I choose to show you or something.
Okay. I mean, if I don't buy into the logic of that, and I don't even entertain the story that shame part is telling you, that defended part, there is this, I don't know how to take it in. And I imagine yeah. the stories could vary based on what's happening, but they have the same function of mm-hmm. like, keep this out. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. let's try again. What is that part afraid might happen if you let in? And maybe we'll just talk about us, if you let in my affection for you.
Maybe you'll be disappointed.
Oh, yeah.
Me. Like, if I am not so good, mm. you know, quote unquote, good mm. next time, or. Mm.
That I'm going to, if we both feel this way, or if you don't protect yourself from this, then when I really see you, right, mm-hmm. then I'm going to change how I feel about you, and that's going to hurt even more in some mm-hmm. ways. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Taking in affection from someone is a skill. The ability to receive and let those things go deep within us. We have to practice it. And sometimes we've grown up with stories that have told us that taking in affection or pride from somebody else is arrogant or boastful, or, you know, it's not a good look. And so just like with any other feeling or any other skill, if we thought it would jeopardize our belonging, or if we were shamed for it, we learned pretty quick how to shut it down.
Can you do anything to respond internally to that? Instead of just letting it be there and like, oh, shut down. No, can't take this in. And any ideas about how you might be able to respond to that block? It's not a quiz.
Yeah, I don't know. Uh-huh. I don't know.
Could you talk yourself out of it? Like, is there any information you have?
I feel like I could recognize it.
Yeah.
You know, like label yeah. it as like yeah. a defense mechanism.
Great. Great. Maybe I'll give you a bunch of ideas about things that we could do, and you can pick one and see how it goes. You could come back at that defense and say, here's the reason why I don't need to believe that right now. Right? So like, this is what I know about how Hillary feels about me. And if she's waiting to see the worst parts of me to change how she feels, like, this is where you come to talk about the most painful, most hard, difficult, messy parts of your life, right? So mm-hmm. if Hillary's waiting for the worst part of you, you could probably talk yourself through that and say, I imagine she's already seen it. There's that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Another piece would be... maybe to self-soothe, to ground a little bit, to feel yourself in your body, to feel yourself held by the couch, and know, oh, that thing came up, but I can kind of return to this moment. I don't need to get sucked into the story of what could happen in the future. I can be right now. Mm-hmm. We could thank that defensive part and say, oh, you're trying to keep me from feeling hurt. Thank you. And maybe that's actually not the choice I'm going to make for myself right now. You could look for evidence in the here and now about how I feel about you, and see, like, does she look like she's waiting to judge me? Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Any of those feel like of interest to you?
Yeah. But now I can't remember what it was. Okay, I was like, oh, that's not, I think it was your third finger, maybe. It was after the grounding?
Yeah.
What was it?
Talking to it.
Oh, like thanking. It's a part. Yes, mm-hmm. thanking it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So can you imagine for a moment what the defense looks like?
I kind of see one of those, like, wall dividers.
Yes, okay.
Where I'm just, like, having a conversation, and then I'm just, like,
pulling it across.
Like, while we're talking, like, oh, yeah, okay. That's great.
Okay. Yeah.
It's kind of what it feels like.
So can you imagine thanking the wall divider? Mm-hmm. You helped me. Mm-hmm. By not letting anybody in. Mm-hmm. But this might be a place where I don't need you so much.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's also, like, acknowledging that I never got any positive feedback.
Oh.
As a child, yeah. I talked to my sister about this a lot. Like, there was no, like, oh, you did good at that. It was all just neutral or negative. Mm-hmm. And even if it was, like, a compliment, it was always, like, underhanded with something. And
wow,
So there really just was like no opportunity to practice any sort of accepting of positive feedback. And like I also did not do well in school. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't even like positive feedback at school. It was always negative feedback. And I was probably a lot like just not able to focus and not able to get my work done and whatever. Mm-hmm. So like that's a piece of it too. That's a piece of it.
Yeah.
If all kids ever receive for praise is some sort of acknowledgement of their most excellent achievements, then what it's saying to them is, we only see you, you only matter to us when you are above and beyond other people. What we want to try and do is praise kids for the hard work that they're doing. And what that means is, maybe your kid comes home with a C+ on a test, but you knew that they worked harder on studying for that exam than they've ever worked on studying for an exam in the past. And so that's where you choose to put your praise, because you're saying, I see your hard work. I know that this cost you something. And instead of just focusing on the outcome, the A+, or even the C+, saying, when you work hard and when you give yourself to something, and you do your very best, that's what matters to me. I see you and you matter to me.
What if someone you love asks you to help them die? What would you say? This is the powerful question at the heart of The Ultimate Choice. The series follows the journey of Michael and his wife Anne as they grapple with his request to choose the way he wants to die. I'm Rob Cribb. And through their story, I learned a lot about my own family. I hope the show is a way to start conversations many of us want to have, but rarely do. The Ultimate Choice is out now.
Well, two things. I'm so sorry, right? Like, oh my gosh. There was so much that could have been said that wasn't said, and that was not okay. And you were not seen in your goodness. And that wasn't about you.
Yeah.
The second thing is, I've never heard you talk about that without the sadness emerging in a really big way. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if it was inside or if it felt different to talk about it today.
It felt a little different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And thinking a little bit too, like, the thought of my own kids and how hard I have to remember to give them positive feedback. It's not something that comes naturally to me.
Yes.
And so it's something that I have to work on.
Yeah. Of course you have to work on it. Mm-hmm. Of course it doesn't come naturally. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, you know, built into the way you saw family life done. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I just saw it in a new way, I think, like this wall divider. I read a little piece of research not that long ago about emotional neglect, or the felt sense of distance between a child and their caregiver as being even more painful than negative attention. And that it feels so lonely, like total panic and despair, that the only way to survive is to do a shutting down, a dissociation, a kind of numbing. And what a beautiful way that you have protected yourself from the absence of being seen and valued and treasured. And yet the painful piece as I listen to you is, here I am saying, oh, I see you. I see you. Oh, you're spectacular. Look at this. Right? Wow. And right, it starts to come back even now when you are getting the thing that you need. Okay, so can we go back just to rewind the tape to me, like, getting excited about something that you have done that I'm just in awe at your ability to hold your relief and your joy and your lightness and some of the sadness about what just this last few weeks, what it's been like, hold them together. And as I share that with you, What I'd like for you to do is practice noticing if the wall is closing. And if it's not, seeing if you can let yourself kind of see my beaminess for you and just like check it out, take it in. Maybe let yourself like savor that for a moment. Okay? So we're going to continue with our experiment. Okay. Does that feel like too much?
No, it doesn't feel like too much.
Okay.
But I can already feel like everything. Like.
Okay. So how, again, can you have a dialogue with that wall right now in your mind? Of course you tried to protect me. And I'd like for you to just maybe even slow down just a little bit. Mm-hmm. You feel like you've done that on the inside? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Let this be about me for a moment then. I love watching you shine. I love seeing things that you didn't know how to do, you now being able to do. I don't know if there's anything more special or sacred in this entire world than being with a person in a room and seeing them show up consistently for themselves, take the risks with me, do the hard things, and then have these moments where it's like, oh, that tree that we planted so long ago, look at all the fruit on it.
Oh. I don't know why I'm crying. Oh.
Just stay with me for a moment. I know there was so much pain that was unseen for so long, but I also know here in the context of our relationship, there was so much work that no one else besides you and I will ever get to know about. Maybe even I won't even get to know just how much work it took. And I want you to see that. I want for you to know exactly how I feel about you. You deserve to see yourself through someone else's eyes. Somebody who sees your goodness, your hard work, your perseverance, your strength, your tenderness. So there are tears. Do you have a sense of noticing just what it's like to hear me say all of that?
It feels very like validating.
Wow.
It has been so much work.
Yes. Yeah. So there's a part of you like that's like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah. It's been a lot of work.
So much work. What's happening to this sliding kind of wall, the room divider?
Well, I think I successfully kept it back.
Yeah. And that's what the tears were about?
Yeah. Maybe it's like to protect from like feeling things too.
Yeah. 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 That's right. Wow. Oh. This feels really good.
Yeah.
There is a sense of relief for me in knowing that you can take in how I feel about you, and a joy and a delight in you getting a glimpse of what I feel for you. Life is way too hard to do alone. It's way too hard.
Yeah.
And I have this sense of feeling really connected to you in this moment, and that you can feel that.
Yeah. Life is hard to do alone. And I felt so lonely.
Yeah.
Like so lonely.
So lonely. Yeah. Yeah. All the more reason to savor these moments of connection and to work at taking in affection when it is there. Mm-hmm. Can we end thinking about this note of you being able to hold these two things at the same time? Movement, energy, kind of aliveness in you, and some sadness about knowing it can't stay that way forever.
Yeah.
And that it's beautiful that you can feel both. And actually, if I'm really going for it, the way you described it, even visually, is the sadness was held by this other thing. It was almost within that.
Yeah.
It's pretty special.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe a takeaway, if I could invite you to reflect on this, would be perhaps later tonight before you go to bed, or if you have a moment when you're just kind of cleaning up the house or something, to come back to that moment of of everything that I was sharing with you about how I feel about you, to replay that in your mind. Mm-hmm. In that way, to make it last longer, to be with it again, to be with me again. Because mm-hmm. you're so good at replaying or anticipating the losses. I think you deserve a chance to replay or revisit or remember some of the things that feel really connected and special in that way. Mm-hmm. You feel up for that?
Yeah,
I can. Yeah. Okay.
Give it a go.
Okay. Yeah. Let's talk about when we can see each other.
Often we have negative experiences that give us so-called proof that we're bad or the world is unsafe, and we replay those for hours. Those are the things that keep us up at night. But rarely do we take the experiences where we felt safe and loved and seen and replay those with the exact same vigor. And so if we have experiences that give us something that we've been missing, those are the ones that we need to go back to and do the hard work to stay with. Just a few more times, enough to tell our brains that really did happen. It wasn't imaginary. It happened, and I can go back to remind myself just how real it was. I'm Hillary McBride. Other People's Problems is produced by Jody Martinson, mixed by Will Howie. TK Matunda is our associate producer. Tanya Springer is our senior producer. Fabiola Carletti is our digital producer. RF Nirani is the executive producer of CBC Podcasts.
For more CBC Podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.